Hey there, and welcome to The Dude Therapist. I'm Ellie Weinstein, your host, and I'm thrilled to have you join us for another episode. Here on the show, we believe in getting straight to the point. No fluff, no sugarcoating, just honest conversations that hit home. Each week, we sit down with experts in relationships, mental health, and self-help to dig deep into topics that matter most to you. Whether you're navigating the ups and downs of love, struggling with anxiety, or looking for ways to become the best version of yourself, we've got you covered. But here's the thing. We're not just here to talk at you. We're here to listen, to learn, and to grow together. Our guests bring a wealth of knowledge and experience to the table, but it's the stories they share and the insights they offer that truly make a difference. So grab your favorite drink, find a cozy spot to settle in, and get ready for some real talk, because here at The Dude Therapist, we're all about keeping it real, keeping it kind, and keeping it knowledgeable. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Dude Therapist. We have Liz Earnshaw on. I don't know about you guys, but like, her content is awesome. And this has been a work in the making of your book, and then so many amazing things happening in your life. So I'm so happy to finally get to talk to you today. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm a little bit tired. I have a new baby at home. So you know how it is. It's just,
yeah, it makes sense.
Just and the way it
I feel like when you have kids, there's just always tired. Just never
You're
stops.
Always tired. It never stops.
Yeah. Never stops. And could you introduce yourself a little bit for the listeners so they get a little taste of who you are if they don't know who you are yet? And then we'll get right into this awesome conversations about relationships.
Sure. My name's Liz Earnshaw. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I own a practice out of Philadelphia that specializes in, we do general mental health therapy, but also relationship therapy. I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of couples. My thing is couples therapy. I love working with couples. And I have an Instagram account called Liz Listens, where I share information about relationship health. And I also have a book called I Want This to Work, which is pretty much an overview of some of the things that I share with people in couples therapy and the tools that I use to help people connect better. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny. I love Philly. I have a lot of family in Philly. And, you know, I'm a big relationship person, a relationship specialist myself. And I know why I got into it. Like, what pushed you in that direction to become that your focus?
Yeah. Well, at first I wanted to be a teacher, which I was terrible. I was not a good teacher. I went to school to be a teacher. When I would work with kids, it was just too much going on in the room and I wasn't good. I was always wanting to do like one-on-one conversations. And so I quickly decided that I needed to get a master's degree in something and it needed to not be teaching because I wasn't good at it. And I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I was like, maybe I'll be a lawyer like my dad, or maybe I don't know what I can do with this. I'll do public health. I just kind of looked at any degree that would be out there. And I did not think of therapy, to be honest. And I was driving down the highway one day and there was a billboard for a couples and family therapy program. And I thought, oh my gosh, I love working with kids. I should be a family therapist. I'm good with kids, just not in a big group. And so I applied, I got in, and I became a family therapist. And I was working with kids and I was working in schools and all sorts of stuff. And what I noticed is that when I was working with the kids, most of my conversations with the parents was really what was most fulfilling to me. I love playing with kids. I love working with kids. But at the end of the day, it was when the parents came in and they would come in really bristly sometimes. You know, the teacher had called and complained, you know, your kid is wrecking the classroom or something. Mm-hmm. And they would come in like, your teachers don't know how to do their job or blah, blah, blah. And I always found it so satisfying that I could kind of help them de-escalate and be heard and we could figure out what was going on. And it got to the point where a lot of them would say, well, would you do couples therapy with us as parents? Mm-hmm. And so at that point, I thought, I'm going to move from doing the kids stuff to working with the grownups around kids stuff. And I started doing more really couples focused training. And it's been history ever since because I absolutely love it.
Yeah. And that, you know, similarly, I used to work at a clinic where I saw everything, like one of these mills of a kind of clinic.
Yeah.
And it was just, I worked with a lot of kids And I ended up needing to work with the parents more and wanting to work with the parents more. And people, like, it's so funny. I love working with couples.
Me too.
I love it. It is such a challenge. Mm-hmm. It is very draining. It's very hard, but I love it. And it's something that is a very big passion. So I'm so excited to talk to you today. And you have this line on your social media where you call yourself a relationship realist.
Yeah.
Right? That's like your tagline. Yeah. What does that mean?
I'm not what I think people assume a couples therapist is. I'm not very like mushy, or I really am not super into like, this is what the book says you should do and blah, blah. I'm very realistic. I feel like with my advice, I try to think like, what would make me cringe if it was told to me, or if I went to a therapist and they were like, you and your husband should try to do this, it'll make things better. What would I walk away and be like, whoa, they don't know reality. Like, that is not going to work. Mm-hmm. That really comes out of lots of experience with couples, where in the beginning I would give the very cliche kind of advice. I'm sure you've mm-hmm. had this experience too. And you would just know that they were leaving thinking like, we're not going to do a check-in every night. Like, what is she talking about? We have jobs, we have kids. Like, no, we're not doing that. Or we're not going to say things this specific mushy way. That's just not going to work for us. It's not our style. And so I try to think what life actually looks like at home when I'm working with couples, and what is going to realistically help them, not just what a book says or not just what a theory says, but really what works in their lives. That's what
I love that, because my style is no BS with lots of compassion. That's like my brand.
Yes, like, I love it. Like, I'm also no BS.
I'm just like when someone's coming to me, especially couples.
Yeah.
And usually couples are coming for like, this is not working, or something's really wrong, or something's very serious. Me going through that classic cliches is not helping with any productive progress or growth or anything. It's me just delaying a reality. Yeah. And I tell clients, and I don't say, hey, you should break up. Mm-hmm. But I say, like, if you continue this way, it's not ending well.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to work if you're at the red zone of arguing, if you're just in red, you're hot and aggressive and angry at each other all the time. That's not sustainable. Or if you keep talking this way, they're not going to feel love.
Totally.
Not, oh, you should just, you know, give a high five every night and it'll solve problems. Like, no, like, you have to be real. People are coming for real. And that's why I love your energy and your vibe and your stuff. You know, you've been doing this probably what, 10 years?
I think it's like 12 or 13 now.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of change in the world in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. What do you think used to be a very common relationship struggle?
Mm.
And what do you think is a newer, maybe relationship struggle that you're seeing over the past couple of years?
So, I mean, this could just be experience. Maybe it's always, I know it's always been there in some capacity, but what I would say is when I was first starting, I got a lot more of cases that I think were what people would expect. And what mm-hmm. I mean by that is it was, you know, I would get betrayals. So people would come to couples therapy because somebody had an affair. That was really common when I first started. And I would also get just people who would have horrible fights. You know, we get drunk and we scream at each other or whatever, and we're going to break up if it doesn't stop. I would say now, and this might just be, I see through the issues a little bit differently. The world has added so many pressures that I see so many relationships that I think otherwise would be pretty good relationships. They're not coming in because there was an affair. They're not coming in because their partner is like the worst human on the planet and like it's not to be saved or something. They're coming in because life has like so many burdens that they cannot navigate. And it causes, and I was talking to you before the call, like I have a book that I'm writing about this, but it causes so much nervous system escalation and it causes so much difficulty just like getting through the day to day that they're at each other's throats and they don't know that that's what it is. So they're coming in and they're saying, you know, we never connect anymore. We never have sex. We always argue, blah, blah, blah. And I asked them to tell me about their life. And they're like, well, we're both attorneys and we work 70 hours a week. And we just went through infertility treatments and we have a 2-year-old at home. We just found out we're having twins and we're getting our kitchen remodeled and, you know, blah, on and on and on and on. And if you ask them, well, have you thought that maybe the reason you're at each other's throats is because there's too much? It's not that your partner, and it usually becomes that they kind of point their fingers and ascribe something to their partner, right? Mm-hmm. He is so lazy, or they are so distant, or they never know how to argue, or they never want to talk about their feelings or whatever it is. But when I back it away and I'm like, yes, maybe the two of you have some issues that you need to learn how to communicate differently, but really the outside world is causing so much of this for the two of you, and how you navigate the outside world and what can we do to protect you from that. So that's something I've seen more, especially from 2020 onward.
I very much, one of the reasons I was excited to talk with you is that like reality base that you kind of put everything in. Uh-huh. And it's so true, because to me, I've seen this, and I know like Gottman talks about the bubble, right? That protective. Right. That to me is something that is, I think, so threatened in today's day and age.
Yes.
People don't have a solid bubble and have the external world creeping in so aggressively into their day-to-day and their mindset about life and each other, that it rips people apart who are, that love each other.
Yes.
I can't say that they're the best fit. What does that even mean?
Right.
They love each other. They care about each other. They've been with each other for long enough to continue and all these wonderful things, but these external forces are crashing down on them all at once. I know, you know, last couple of months, you know, I'm Jewish. And with all the stuff going on in Israel, and I have a few clients who are Jewish, and that war and the stuff going on, the stress, the distraction, the disconnect because of everything going on, caused so many fights. Not about the idea, not about what side you're on.
Yeah.
Just where are you?
Yeah.
And it wasn't that there's a problem. It's that they're somewhere else for a good reason.
Yeah.
And it was this, and same thing with politics and things of that nature,
where decisions people make.
Exactly. Yeah. And work stresses and the pressure and the drive. You have two driven people and they're like, we have never spent time with each other. I'm like, yeah.
You
want to do your job.
Right.
So it's about prioritizing how you can pull back a little bit here and a little bit there and add this and be more cognizant that maybe you only have an hour or two a night at most. Maybe 30 minutes to spend time with each other, and then you make the most of that.
Right.
Not
right.
What the hell is wrong with our couple? We you know, what the hell's wrong with us? We work when we get home, we work afterwards.
Right.
There's a problem.
Why aren't we feeling like we don't have sex?
And it's like well, cuz you're not.
Of course you don't want to have sex. You have Slack messages.
Yeah.
Constantly bombarding you.
Yeah, so I think that's a great point that I think, you know, yes, with all the beauty of technology and information, all that stuff, that there's so much going on within our world that is just leaking into every part of our stuff. For you, you know, in your perspective, the work that you do, how do you help couples break that external stuff coming in to be able to create a relationship that is more fulfilling for them with whatever reality they have?
Well, like you, I'm very no BS. So I point out the reality, which is sometimes hard for people to hear. They don't want to hear it because it means you have to start setting boundaries, or it means that you have to start accepting. You know, I have a lot of clients also, let's say that they're affected by what's happening in Israel, and they're upset with each other by how each handles it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're too involved. You're getting angry.
You don't care enough.
And then the other is like, well, you're not involved, or you let your dad say this thing in front of the kids, and I can't believe you let him. And so it's all this stuff, but there's no like limit or culture within the relationship. Like, how do we navigate stress, even if we navigate it differently? Mm-hmm. And so the first thing is that I point out, these are things that are going to cause you problems. And I talk about the couple bubble and I say, these are all thirds is what they're known as. And if they invade your relationship, you only have so much energy in your life. And so they're taking some of that and you are going to have nothing left. And so whether the third is politics or social media or work or in-laws or going to the gym, it could be a good thing, right? Yeah. Stress is also stress. So no matter what it is, you have to see that there is so much that's crushing the two of you. And I do a lot of psychoeducation in the start, if this is the issue, around what that does to our physiology. And that helps to depersonalize it, because once I can say, this isn't a thought process for them at that point, you know, once they're upset about what's happening with this thing that's happening in the world, or they're upset about what's happening with their mom, or upset about what's happening at work, their body is actually reacting to that. And I talk about how when our bodies react, we have stress hormones flood our bodies. And those stress hormones put us into fight or flight or freeze, none of which are conducive to relationships. All of our relational skills go out the window. We can't be funny when we're in fight. We can't show affection when we're in any of these states. It just, any of the things that help us to get along, they're not there because we're in a self-protective space. So I talk to them about that. And then I help them to see, like, who are we as a couple when we're under stress? Are we like putting our head in the sand? So are we the couple that pretends it's not happening until we get the huge tax bill in the mail, or until it's been 8 weeks since we've talked to each other? Are we vicious tigers or dogs fighting with each other? You know, the neighbor does something that makes us upset, but instead of fighting with the neighbor, we start screaming at each other, you know, yeah. I don't like how you're dealing with the neighbor. I don't like how you're dealing with my mom. Or are we cooperative? And how can we become more cooperative? How can we set the boundaries? How can we learn to co-regulate so that this stuff that's leaking, I like the word leaking that you used, that's leaking into our lives, we can plug those holes.
And, you know, for me, and I have a question about that, but for me, one of the biggest things is not to be happy all the time. That can't be the goal. That's not possible. No. It's, to me, it's to be harmonious.
Yes.
So like, I'm a big music person.
And my to husband me, it's too.
Oh, I used to be in a boys choir as a kid and I used to sing. Really? And yeah, you know, well, I love that. So I play guitar. I haven't touched it in a while, but I have a guitar that I used to play, you know, kind of thing.
Nice.
And for me, harmony is not always, you're not always saying the same words. You're coming in with some weird, you know, ad libs, and you're coming from different directions, different timing, different beats, and different notes to create this full picture of a harmony. If you ever listen to classical music and you actually put on real headphones, like good headphones, and you close your eyes and you listen, no one's usually playing at the same time except for certain parts.
Sure.
As a couple, we need to do that. And sometimes we're playing the same together. Sometimes we're playing different notes, different things. And it doesn't mean that we're not in the same orchestra, on the same team, in the same effort. And I think people conflate, oh, well, you're playing a different note. You're coming in at a different beat. Something's wrong. There's a problem. Fix that. Match me. Meet me here. And I use that metaphor. Another one I always use is like the racetrack, right? Mm. If you're all running, let's say you're both runners. One does the 50 meter and one does the 1,000 meter, let's say.
Right.
You can't compare the races. My ability to run and sprint 50 meters versus 1,000. You're both runners, though. You're both in the same sport.
Right.
You're just at different parts of the race. You can't look at the other person and go, what the hell's wrong with you? How come you can't go? Why are you going so fast? Why are you going so slow?
Right.
You can't be parallel at all times. And that's what I see a lot of couples, especially with values and belief systems, that we can coexist together. If we just look at the other person coming in at their different parts, instead of being like, you're an enemy to me.
Yes.
So how do we do that? How do we coexist when we have different maybe values or opinions about things and coexist smarter and not rip a couple apart when there's so much love and so much connection and so much other things, but maybe you voted for a different president. Maybe you believe in a different thing all of a sudden. Maybe you matured or grew up compared to 10 years ago when we first started dating.
Yeah.
How do we do that? How do we navigate that new reality?
That's one of the biggest things that I I think you probably do too, that I work on with couples and couples therapy, because that's a huge stressor for them, is the fights that they get into around mm-hmm. different beliefs and philosophies that they have. One of the biggest things that makes change is even just being able to see that that's what it is. It's a philosophy. It's a belief. It's not a truth. And just that, yeah. And just that can help shift the dynamic a little bit away mm-hmm. from you're a problematic spender to we have different philosophies about spending. I always say to people, you both existed until you met each other. So for you to so harshly critique this other person and their existence is a little confusing. Mm-hmm. Because until you met, they survived. They didn't die, mm-hmm. did they? No. Okay. They didn't end up homeless, did they? No. So their spending is a problem to you because that's a different philosophy than you have. Mm-hmm. But this is how they've survived up until your point. And it's not to say that it's not impactful to you and we don't have to figure it out. But the one thing that we have to first do is recognize that these are two philosophies. They are not two truths. And that perhaps if you were in a different world with a different partner, this wouldn't even be coming up as an issue. Mm-hmm. And so something I help them to do is I help them to think about and talk about if you were the king of the world on this issue, whether it's a political issue or money issue or a sex issue or how do we deal with in-laws, what would you say you think people should do? And that's usually somebody's philosophy. Well, I would say that people should have really good boundaries with their in-laws. Mm-hmm. Well, I would say people should have an open door. Everybody should be able to come in whenever they want to. I would say people should spend their money. They're going to die and you don't know when it's going to happen. I would say people should save their money so they have security. And so when we start talking about that, we can then use something that's, I don't know if you've ever utilized Gottman's Dreams Within conversation. And so that's where we talk about where does that come from? And when you can spend time talking about that, you're not getting all gridlocked on how do we solve this problem. Instead, you're talking about, well, the reason I believe that people should save money is because when I was little, we always had money issues. It was a horrible feeling. I don't ever want that again. Or the reason I think people should spend is because when I was little, we spent like crazy and it was always fine and it was super fun. Or we never spent a cent and life was boring. And then my parents died young and it was stupid for them to save it all. And so slowing down, anybody listening, it's like if you are in two positions where you keep fighting, slow down. What do you both think should happen and where does this come from? Because if you can talk about that, you can have empathy and compassion and all of those things for each other. And then you can say, all right, well, I don't want to create a world where I smush you and everything you believe in. For me, is there a combination that can work here? And it might not be perfect. It's not going to be like even, but what could maybe the combination with money is we have a savings account. It's always got this much in it. We don't touch it, but this amount goes into other accounts and you can be as frivolous as you want. And I'm not going to even bring it up to you. Anyway, that's a long-winded answer.
I love that. I have so many points. I suggest, by the way, and I know this like seems maybe simple to some people or stupid, joint accounts and another account. Like yeah. I have couples that I work with where they're not married yet. They mm-hmm. plan to be, they want to be, it's the future, but they're dating. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're engaged. They live in the same apartment and who pays for what? Mm-hmm. And one person is the more responsible person who's on top of bills
yeah.
and does all the paying. And then they feel uncomfortable or annoyed to go ask, or as they put it, beg their person for the money back.
Yes. Oh, such a comment.
And I'm like, just have a joint account. Like, what yeah. do you mean? Have an account for the house.
Yeah.
You take a certain, you know how much it is, budget. You know how much you're spending. So take yeah. that amount. Just automatically have it taken out of your check, you know, right. your payment, and put it right into the account.
Right.
And that's the account that's connected to all the payments. So no one has to ask anyone for money. It's just there.
Right.
And they're like, oh, that's smart. Yeah, we don't have to fight about it. Right. And for me, I think the struggle, and I love that breakdown to get to like the empathy and compassion of what actually the person cares about versus what actually is being done, like the things being said yeah. or their actions. Yeah. How do we then deal with someone who feels that that is not respected? That like, I keep putting my thing aside for yours. I keep asking you to respect this thing, not the thing itself, but the feeling, the understanding, the empathy about, you
the
know,
need
that
I have. Like the need I have. Need.
And yeah. It keeps not getting met for whatever, either good reason, frustrating reason, stupid reason, whatever it is. And we're fighting that it's not happening.
Yeah.
Not about the thing itself. We stopped arguing about that. Now you're just not respecting, like, mm-hmm. whether it's, I don't want to be abandoned. Please don't leave me when we have an argument.
Mm-hmm.
Or mm-hmm. money freaks me out because I didn't have a lot of money growing up.
Right.
Or I like to have plans set right. before because I don't function well. My stress level of the week of to book tickets and go makes me crazy.
Right. And then I'm not fun and I'm not a good partner anyway.
And then then we argue and then I yell and then you yell and then we yell. Yeah. And then it feels like we're just in this holding pattern. How do we deal with that person in the relationship who just feels I did everything you said, Liz.
Yeah.
And they're just not, I'm not being respected in that way in a practical, mm-hmm. there's no coming together. It just feels mm-hmm. like we can't coexist because of it.
It's really hard when that happens. I'll use your first example of, I've told you that, let's say that they say, I've told you, I get it, that you might need to blow off steam in an argument, but my need is that you at least tell me I'm going to come back in 20 minutes or that you at least do come back. But what keeps happening, even though I've agreed to let you go off and I've done a really good job, detaching from that and like letting you be and having your space, the agreement on your end hasn't happened. You abandon me or you give me the silent treatment or whatever it is. I think that's a pretty common one that will come up is like, this isn't fair because I am doing this and they're not doing the reverse for me, even though they know that it makes me feel abandoned or even though they know that that is like my disrespect trigger point, I get really angry. And I think there's so many reasons that that could be happening that I definitely start from a space of, well, let's explore what's going on. If the person's prickly and defensive, I'm going to work on their defensiveness, right? Because if they're still defensive, that means they haven't even let this in anyway. If you've let something in, you're not defensive. You can say, you're right, I haven't done it. I don't know what my problem is, right? And then that's a different path. But if they're like, well, I still am not getting it. I still don't understand why I would have to... you should just know I'm going to come back whenever I want to come back. Or this is you trying to control me and they're trying to like wiggle out of whatever they agreed to. I'm very direct with people and I work with containment. So one of the most important things I do in couples therapy is I don't let people wiggle away. And mm-hmm. so I hold people to that and I'll say, well, help me understand. 2 weeks ago, you agreed that this was fair, that if this person pulled back, you would work on pulling towards, you would help them understand you love them. Help me understand where it sounds like you've changed your mind, that you don't want to do that anymore. And you can kind of go with that. And one of the things that I like to ask people is, so what you're telling me is you don't want to accept your partner doing X, but you would like your partner to accept for as long as this relationship is that you're going to do Y. So you don't want your partner to follow you around the house when you're upset because that's distressing to you. And you expect your partner to accept that you abandon them, which is distressing to them, for as long as you feel like doing it. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're telling me? Mm-hmm. So I ask people questions like that, you know, and they'll often be like, well, no, that's not what I'm telling you. Or, well, yeah, I think they should just learn to deal with it. Da, 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 da.
And then you deal with that.
And so I just keep going with it. Well, tell me, what's that look like when somebody deals with something, you know?
Yeah.
And I start doing something called cross-questioning where mm-hmm. like I'll go to the other partner and be like, what are you thinking when they say you should deal with it? Does mm-hmm. this feel familiar? Yes, that's often the narrative. I should deal with it. Da, 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 da. Oh, what do you think about them saying that this is familiar? This is kind of mm-hmm. how you navigate everything in life. And that might be where I go off with, who told you you had to just deal with things?
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. My dad told me I should just suck it up. Or that's how mm-hmm. we dealt with things in my family or whatever. And it's like, okay, well, let's talk about that. How was that for you? Mm-hmm. What happened? Sometimes it takes some time, right? To get somebody to soften up and say, I get it. I have responsibility here. Mm-hmm. If they don't, we have three choices. You know, the partner who wants something different, who doesn't want to be abandoned, can choose to work to accept that. And I say no judgment, like your partner's telling you they're going to always do this. So we've worked on it for three sessions. I don't know what else to tell you. Do you want to learn how to cope with that? Because everything else is good, but this sucks. The person might say, yeah, they're just going to be this way. It's annoying, but I'll cope. Or do you want to just continue on? You guys keep fighting whenever this happens. Or is this a big enough thing that you want to think about ending the relationship? Yeah. So if it becomes so gridlocked, this other person's being unreasonable, those are the choices. Now, the other thing I'll say is if they are not defensive, if they are like, I really do want to change this. I, you know, Liz, I'm embarrassed. I have people say that, you know, I did. I agreed 3 weeks ago. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to scream anymore or leave or threaten divorce. And I keep doing it. And you're right, so-and-so, I shouldn't do this to you anymore. That's not, that's a different conversation where we might talk more about what's happening with your physiology. You know, what are your coping skills? It sounds like this isn't coming out of disrespect. This isn't coming out of a cognitive choice to ignore what your partner needs. For whatever reason, you're not able to do it. And so that might be individual therapy or practicing in couples therapy, how to like self-soothe. But those are probably the different routes I would take.
I love that. You know, a question I ask often is like, why is it hard for you not to do this? Like, why is it hard for you to do this for your partner? Like, what is stopping you from seeing the pain that they're going through or the struggle that they are having with your action behavior or whatever it is, and you understand that, and you, you say you love them and care about them, what is stopping you from actually doing it then?
That's good.
And I'm very like I'm very real and very direct with them because like you're coming to me for a reason. And the struggle that I have as a couples therapist is the laundry list struggle, right? When someone comes into therapy and the partner is like, like with just 30 things that happened wrong that week, giving no space for the other person to share perspective, any can't even defend themselves even if they wanted to. And I don't know about you, but I sometimes split up the sessions. I do individual sometimes with the couple associated so that we can have space for each one. And how one of the partners, and I've had multiple couples over the years, I get nervous before couples therapy because I feel like I'm just being attacked every time. Like, I feel like I have no footing to stand on because no matter what I'm doing, there's another list the next week.
I can't really say what's, and I can't really talk truly.
Yeah, there's another list the next week. And so for me, how do you deal with that as a couples therapist? How do you deal with that if you are in the relationship that's happening as well?
I mean, it's hard to deal with that. Sometimes there is something clear that can be worked on there where, it, you know, if there was a betrayal or something like that, you can maybe get to the core of this laundry list is really protective for you. And I hear that, you know, it's hard. Your partner has made so many strides and things have improved, but I wonder if there's a part of you that's scared that if you don't have a complaint, that you're setting yourself up for, you know, the first year of your kid's life where your partner never helped or something like that. Or is this just a habit now? And so sometimes there's that stuff. Sometimes, though, what I find is that it is a power, an attempt for power and control, which, yes, could come out of that fear of vulnerability. But sometimes it's so embedded that that is, it's really hard to move past. It's not the norm. The norm is that you can soften somebody by saying something like, it must be scary not to bring up your concerns. Or maybe you don't feel during the week that you have space to bring them up. So they're all coming up here. I help you. And with that first, I'm helping them learn new dynamics. You can complain, of course. But I'm wondering how you think you're being received right now. You know, the way you're doing it is making your partner pull back. You're not getting what you want. Would you try to do something different? And I give them the words to say and I help them. But with somebody where it's really ingrained and like saying that would even piss them off, You know, you say to them, I know this is like you're protecting. I'm not protecting myself. I should be able to bring up a complaint if I want to. And, you know, you guys just want to shut me down. Nobody wants me to be able to talk about my anger.
This is why couples therapy ended last time, you know?
Yes. And you're like, okay, I want you to talk about your anger. What I'm telling you is like, it's not being received well by me or by the other, you know, I'll use myself even. Yeah. I'm struggling to listen to you because it's the same every week. How can I help you with this? With that, I talked to them a lot about moving the goalposts. You know, mm-hmm. What is your goal here? What is the goal? The goal is you want, by sharing these complaints, you want what? I want them to be an equal contributor. I want them to care about my feelings more. I want them to understand how much they hurt me. Okay. And what would that look like if that goal happened? How would you know they're doing those things? Well, they would be listening to me more often, or I wouldn't have to nag them, or I wouldn't have to tell them to get off of Instagram at the end of the day. They would just take my hand and hug me and give me affection. It's like, great. So we're trying to get there. And what I need to point out to you is that 2 weeks ago, your goals were different. You told me you would be happy as long as they got home on time and you guys could hang out. But now the goalposts have moved. And every time they move, what your partner is hearing is, you're still failing me. You're still failing me. You're awful.
You're not enough. You're not enough.
You're not enough. And
no matter what you do, it's not enough.
Anywhere that you go that somebody says that, if you're trying a new sport or you're at a job or whatever, if every single time, you know, you're doing soccer and you finally get the ball into the net and they're like, well, yeah, that was our goal, but your kick really sucked. It's like,
it wasn't fancy enough.
Well, I'm not going to be a soccer player then. Yeah. And so you're making it so your partner doesn't want to be a player with you. They're scared to play with you. And I'm wondering, how can we make the goals clear and then pause when they're met? And what do you need so you can self-soothe before kind of bringing up another concern, and so you can show appreciation and recognition for what's changed. Mm-hmm. But also, how can we help you feel confident that when there is an issue, you can talk about it?
Yeah.
But it's hard. And sometimes, you know, it gets through, and sometimes there is so much grandiosity that you can't get through, because a lot of that can be grandiosity, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I know better. I'm the best. This person's beneath me. And sometimes you can't get through to that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, that's, you know, a struggle that anyone and any couple can have is that, you know, and to me, you know what I find that the person who does that more is the one who pushed to go to couples therapy.
The yeah.
person who has the laundry list mentality yeah. or that goalpost switching, or that is the one who said, okay, we're going to go to couples therapy. And the other person's like, okay, fine. Yeah. I think we're good.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah. it's funny that, you know, when I call out that reality of things being the same every week, you said this last week and the week before, you're not giving them a chance. They get so defensive and like protective of this issue. It makes it interesting and fun sometimes, you know, for the couple's therapist to sit there either being yelled at or frustrated with. But that's what has to be done. So anyone who's listening is going to couples therapy. If you've been afraid to do it, it's hard. It's hard to be real with someone, even in individual therapy. But in couples therapy, when it's like so hot and intense sometimes, it's hard to stand up yeah. and be real.
And you want both of them to feel heard. So you yeah. don't want either person to think, oh, well,
attacked, or they're against me, or
not being real. Yeah.
And so you got to be real. And I think one of the hardest things that people struggle with today is the needs colliding, like my needs versus your needs, mm-hmm. your family versus my family. I do more than you, right? And I need a break, but you're too busy, or, you know, all this stuff comes up in so many different ways. And for so many, a relationship is such a big goal of life.
Yeah, it is.
And it could be such a beautiful thing. It's not, doesn't mean it's not hard. Mm-hmm. It's a struggle. Mm-hmm. It's a challenge. What, you know, when you kind of went through all the writing of your beautiful book, right? What do you feel really holds people back from realizing that truth, that you're with someone who you love and care about? And like you write, I want this to work. Mm-hmm. I want this to work, but for some reason, mm-hmm. everything keeps getting in the way. At what point do you say enough? At what point is it not clicking? Not that you hate the person.
Yeah.
We're not talking about aggressive, narcissistic, or abusive, or not talking, sure. We're talking about simple.
Like, this is fine. Like, this person's fine, but
they're wonderful. They're good people. But like, it just, we keep colliding on every little thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you asking what do I do with those types of couples?
No, even just your perspective or what you see of like, I really want this to work, but somehow it just isn't.
Yeah. I mean, I think making space for that is, it can be powerful. Sometimes even so much as like, it helps things to start working. If someone says to them, that's okay. I see you smiling because you're like, yeah, it's kind of paradoxical.
Yeah.
Where it's like, well, maybe that's the case. I think some people come to couples therapy actually, and they're afraid that the therapist is going to make them stay together no matter what. Right. And so they're not going to be heard on that possibility that it isn't going to work. And so I do believe that making space is almost surprising sometimes to people when you're like, okay, you know, you have worked on this for a long time, and I'll throw it out there. Sometimes I can hear that you're both uncertain. What do you think we could talk for a little bit? What would it look like if it didn't work? And this is a hard, I'll say this is a hard conversation. It'd be so much easier if one of you was an asshole.
Yeah.
I say that, you know, if one of you had an affair or one of you was, you know, abusive or something like that, it'd be so much easier because you could use anger or you could use like your need to be respected as a way to fuel your fire to end this relationship. Mm-hmm. But right now you respect this person, you respect each other, but this just isn't working. You butt heads all the time, or like, it's not compatible. And so what would happen if you decided it wasn't working anymore? And sometimes just letting people talk about that is really powerful. And they either recognize, well, it would be kind of awful. We love each other. We want to be together. And we want to figure out, you know, maybe it's not sunshine and rainbows all the time or passion all the time, but this is good. We have kids together. We like our life mostly. And other people will say something like, it feels like a relief to talk about that.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that, you know, I have another response that I get sometimes. Mm-hmm. Well, why did I just waste 5 years of my life?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or why did I just waste this time? And I need to stay in it because it would be such a failure. Or like, I have to start all this over again and find another person to have a family with. Really? Seriously? Even when they know it's not working.
And so much fear. I'm never going to find
so much fear, right? Yeah. I used to work with someone years ago where it was that they were dating someone for 2.5 years and never getting their needs met. Long distance relationship, argument after argument, every session was just unpacking the arguments and the unmet needs. And I said, okay, so what if you just ended it? What would happen? I just start over again in my late 30s. Are you kidding me? No, I can't. What is my family going to say? What am I going to think about myself? I have to go find someone and now try to have kids? Are you kidding me? No. We're going to make this work. And I went, okay, good luck. Right? And I get that response often also.
Yes.
The first two are, you know, of course, I love those two. But like that one's an interesting one of like,
And that comes up in the individual session a lot.
Yeah.
Where it's like
true fear.
I know that I'm not saying it in session, but I really don't think this is going to work, but I really want kids. And if I start over, I'm not going to meet anybody, or what if they're worse? And there's so much fear in that. What I usually do with that is I make the very strong, what I say when we come back together after the individual sessions is based off of my assessment, the two of you aren't ready for couples therapy. And what I mean by that is you're not ready for the type of couples therapy where we're going to improve anything. So we're not going to be like coming in here and fixing your sex life or improving communication. What we're going to do instead is decide whether you want to be together. And we're going to talk about what's keeping you together. We're going to talk about why you would stay together, why you're afraid not to be together. And so I do discernment therapy with them when that comes up, unless that's just, you know, sometimes people say things like, I want to leave, but it's really just their expression of pain. And when you get down to it, they're mm-hmm. like, I just don't know what else to do. But when yeah. you have a person who's like, I really would end this if I wasn't scared, I often make that suggestion in the group. I almost take it off their plate to have to be the one. And, you know, of course, I don't push it. If they're like, no, we really want couples therapy, I'd say, okay, we can go that way. But my recommendation is this. But usually what happens then is the person who was scared bites onto that. And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, we can do that. You know, well, let's just talk about whether we should be together for the next 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. And it helps because sometimes the other person agrees more than they realize. And is able to also say, you know, I love you. I wasn't going to say it, but you're right. Maybe we're not the right fit. Or mm-hmm. what are other options for having kids? I really want kids, but I don't know if I should just be staying with this person for kids. It mm-hmm. doesn't really mean that I'm never going to have them if I leave. And so sometimes I just put it out there so that they don't have to, and they mm-hmm. can kind of bite onto that if they don't bite onto it, I move forward the way they are saying at face value they want to move forward. But I find they usually bite.
Mm, I love that. So, you know, you got all this beautiful work and we have a couple minutes left of stress and individual. What would be a last thing you would say focused on the individual with the work that you're doing now with this new book coming out? That would be a good one or two advice or tips for the individual, not just the couple, but the individual and the struggle of couples therapy and just relationships in general.
Yeah. So one thing that I always share with people is that willfulness kills relationships. Willingness can help save them. And what I mean mm-hmm. by that is that if you are going to be stubborn and defensive and say, I'm not going to change anything until my partner changes something, your relationship will not improve. I can almost promise that. So if you are trying to improve your relationship, you have to take on this sense of I'm willing to try things, even if it doesn't seem fair all the time, even if my partner isn't doing it all the time, I'm willing to be less critical because that's better for me, not just because I'm waiting for my partner to be less defensive, or I'm willing to show more affection or to work to show affection, even if I've got a chip on my shoulder because I haven't been getting the affection I want over the last few years. Mm. So willingness, it doesn't mean willingness without boundaries, but if you want things to work, you both have to have a willingness to try to show up in the way that you want to show up in a relationship, not being stubborn and waiting to show up mm-hmm. in that way. The other thing that I think is really important is thinking about stress, like we talked about earlier, and the way that you navigate stressors in your life, and to be really honest with yourself about that, because we often point our finger at our partner. We're distant because they're disengaged, but how often are you sitting on the couch with your cell phone instead of getting up and walking into the kitchen and embracing your partner and giving them a kiss on the shoulder, mm-hmm. you know? And then you come to couples therapy and you say, well, we're never affectionate, but how many hours did you spend on that cell phone? You know, you might come in and say, we're always fighting about money. Well, yes. And that might be because the two of you struggle with that. But also, how much money did you choose to spend this month on, you know, getting the best Airbnb possible for your vacation? And like, was that necessary?
Yeah.
So thinking about how you're handling these outside stressors and being really honest about the way that it's impacting your partner instead of only looking at the way your partner's doing it. Mm. Because we tend to look outward, you know, they're awful. They're always at work. They're always on their phone, da, da, da. But what are you doing? This is individual work. So in couples therapy, the couples therapist would help you see where both of you land. But what are you doing that's draining that energy, that's draining that connection from your relationship? Mm-hmm. And how can you put some limits around that and boundaries around that?
Mm, I love that. I could talk to you for hours about this stuff. It's just, you're amazing. You're wonderful. Thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate the time.
Thank you. It flew by.
Yeah. That's what you do. You know, welcome to the Dude Therapist podcast. It just flies by, you know, you have a good time.
Flies by.
But really, I love your first book. And
thank you.
You know, and I can't wait to see what comes out with the second one, because that's just exciting. A new perspective that I think is awesome for everyone to read.
Thank you so much. It was so good to talk to you today.
Mm-hmm. Hey, thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of the Dude Therapist Season 5. Can you believe it? I can't. What a journey. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whether it's your first episode you've listened to, or you've been a follower since the beginning, or just trying to catch up, I appreciate you. Thanks so much for really jumping in on this awesome opportunity and learning experience. You know, if you have any questions, ask them. You have thoughts, say them. I didn't finish a thought, or you have more ideas of what you would like to hear, just let me know. The door is open, so to speak, so please walk right in. Tell me what you think. Again, thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Dude Therapist, and hope that you tune in next week.